When he moved to Nashville in 1960, Bill Purcell was a classically trained pianist and composer who found his way into the studios on Music Row during the rise of the Nashville sound. As he was working with some of country music's biggest names, including Chet Atkins and Patsy Cline, Purcell was moonlighting as a classical composer and a soloist with the Nashville Symphony. After a busy and rich musical life in Nashville spanning nearly six decades, Purcell recently retired at age 92 from Belmont University, where he taught since 1980, but he still keeps busy composing. Now fellow Belmont professor Terry Klefstad has written a book chronicling Purcell's life, and it's the latest pick in our Notes in the Margin series, where we share books we think 91 classical listeners will enjoy. Klefstad and Purcell visited the studio to discuss her book. Here's a bit of our conversation. So you called the book Crooked River City.
Mm-hmm.
Can you tell us what that is in reference to?
Oh, well, it means several things. First of all, as I was wrapping up the book, Bill was finishing his opera, Crooked River Town. And it's a bluegrass opera, very local. It's about Nashville and Andrew Jackson and Rachel Robards and their romance. So the name of his opera, I thought, was a really nice name for the book, Crooked River Town. And then I thought I'd call it Crooked River because it's a nice metaphor for the shape of his career. You know, most people, when they study music, they think, okay, I'm a country musician or I'm a bluegrass musician. And most classically trained musicians stick with that. They say, oh, I'm a classically trained musician. But Bill, from early years, was groomed to be a concert pianist and could have been. He had the best coaches. He went to Peabody. He did amazing things. And yet he saw nothing of you know, going off and touring with an R&B band. So his career took all of these twists and turns, from concert artist to entertainer, and then later in Nashville to session keyboardist to producer and arranger and composer, of course. You know, Bill is a fabulous composer. So Crooked River is also a metaphor for the twists and turns that his career took all of his life. It's unique, and it's really the story of how a musician can earn a living in 20th century America.
When you moved to Nashville in 1960, country music was changing into what we know as the Nashville sound.
Yeah, I came here just about at the time the change was happening.
How did the Nashville country musician respond to your classical chops?
Well, there's an enigma. Mentally, I think, and I won't use the word entrenched, but I would say that mentally, most of the musicians were used to expecting certain kinds of musicians to work with them, maybe who came from the Opry and the background, or who had been on the road with Hank Williams and that sort of thing. I think my first session was with Homer and Jethro. So consequently, when I went into that session, I thought, well, they probably want to, you know, have me do a lot of different things. So I was up and down all over the piano. And at the very end of the session, Jethro looked at me and said, well, Bill, sure good to see you again. I knew I flunked out, because that was his polite way of saying, you just don't play our kind of music.
And I think that's the great paradox of your career, is that Eddie Arnold invited you to Nashville during the time when he was trying to change country music to something more urban. So you had the background to help him and Chet Atkins do what they wanted to do, which was what we now call the Nashville sound.
I really don't think that they were even aware of it as much as you're talking mm-hmm. about it now.
But looking back, and I think this is the big story of the book that really didn't emerge until really it was already written, mostly, that, you know, Bill always was kind of an outsider in the recording studios, because he wasn't from, I don't know, Murfreesboro or Clarksville or somewhere. Yeah, he's from California. So he was never quite one of the club, even though he could do everything and then some. And I think there may have been a little resentment from it. Although I talked to Harold Bradley, and he loved you. You know, he said you were his first call for sessions because he knew you could get the job done. But there's always that little sense of alienation there.
Terry, you said that this was part of the reason you wrote this book is so mm-hmm. people know what a central role he played
yes.
in the development of this music.
Exactly. I mean, those formative years at the Nashville Sound, Bill was right there in the studio with them. And he was playing the keyboard parts, and then later he was doing the string arrangement. He worked with the Anita Kerrs all the time. I think it really shows that when you write history, you're writing from what you know and who you know. And the people that have been writing the history of the Nashville Sound know Chet Atkins and Eddie Arnold, so that's what they wrote about.
Sure.
I don't think they've asked enough questions yet. So that's kind of the start here, you know, with our book, is to open the door a bit to the Nashville Sound and say, hey, it actually started a little earlier. There were more people that were instrumental in shaping the sound. And, you know, I've been thinking about this a lot, too, that there's a lot of resentment among the old country music lovers. Like, they're like, oh, they destroyed country music when they made that change. And maybe there's a little bit of that subconscious going on, too, with Bill being a part of that and coming into the studio and being able to play Rachmaninoff. And, you know, they even commissioned a symphony. He composed the Heritage Symphony for the city of Nashville.
Well, I noticed a lot of your classical compositions are really tied to the history of Tennessee and Nashville. What about this area inspires you so much musically?
Well, let me put it this way. Why does John Grisham write all of his novels about things in the South? It is probably one of the most fruitful, if you want to use that word, places for all kinds of history, all kinds of stuff to build on. When you get into the South, good heavens, there's just so much here.
I think also you came to Nashville at such an exciting time. And, you know, living here from 1960 on, seeing the incredible growth of this city and how much it's changed.
Can I ask about the music in your childhood? You mentioned you were adopted and your adopted father only listened to classical music. How did that shape you?
Well, when I grew up, he loved music, classical music, and he played the clarinet. But from the very beginning that I can remember, I heard nothing but classical music, and especially a lot of Russian music. He loved the colors, you know, the Borodin, Tchaikovsky. So I remember today, I still remember the design on the front room rug that I must have been crawling around on when I was listening to the Nutcracker Suite of Tchaikovsky. All of those things implant themselves on your mind as you grow up, and they become a part of your whole id.
You've had so many experiences and you've mastered so many musical skills and styles. And when you read back on this book of your whole life, is there any particular moment in which you felt happiest, either musically or personally?
I think it might have been two places. I think the first one was when I went up to Berkeley to finish high school, and we had access to UC. We could go over there for lectures and different things. I heard Ernst Bloch give a lecture on Shlomo when I was 16. Sat as far from him as I am to you. And I have never been in any kind of environment where there were just so many kids around me that were so on fire with all these ideas and all these things that they were doing.
What's the second time? You said there were two.
Well, I think the second time would have been Peabody.
Mm-hmm. When you were the most happy?
When I was studying with Renee Langer-McKell in Solfeggio.
Mm-hmm.
And she had taught at Curtis, and she was there. I came this close to studying with Nadia Boulanger. I was a scholarship comp student. And in those days, in 1946, Madame Boulanger had come to this country and was up at the Longy School of Theory in Boston. And the reason for that was to keep her safe from the raids that were going on in Paris at that time. So what she was doing was getting on the train every week and coming down from Boston to teach the scholarship students at Peabody. And I was one. And it was that fall that she decided to go back to Paris. So I missed out.
You studied with Nicholas Nabokov.
Well, I studied with him, but on the
other hand,
for a very
short time.
he was a very impatient teacher.
Thank you so much for both of you for coming in and talking to me, and congratulations on the book. Congratulations on a beautiful life and a beautiful career.
Well, thank you.
That's still going. Thank you.